podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. In spite of our affinity towards the longer format, there is a bit of a dearth of that, and we are now also focusing a lot on IPL, what with the tournament coming to near its own end for this season. To help sort of look at what's going on in the IPL and also rest of the cricket world, we have a couple of very special guests. It's a very special episode because these guys have been friends with us for a while and supporting us. So welcome to the podcast, Venkat and Srini from the Yellow and Blues Cricket Podcast.
Thanks, Ajit.
Thank you. Thanks, Ajit.
First of all, how are you guys doing?
Good, thanks. It's been a while, I think, since I've been on the podcast, and it's interesting. The IPL is on, so yeah, it's coming to a close, if you like. You know, we are in the business end. And obviously, the cricket season has started here as well. I've probably been playing less cricket this season. I've moved more into the umpiring side of it, you know, starting to do more umpiring than playing.
Good to hear. I mean, that's still a way of staying involved.
Yeah, that's a way of staying involved. And actually, it's like, you know, you tend to meet more people and you tend to see the game more than, you know, when you're playing, when you're just limited to your own games. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's interesting to, like, you know, look at what's happening, you know, around the place where we live and around the leagues and the clubs, various other clubs.
Nice. Also, I hear you support your club in the background with media and other things.
Yeah, I tend to do that. So I play the occasional friendly games. You know, Venkat actually, he will obviously talk about himself, so I'll let him know. He's kind of our Sunday league captain and does all of the kind of management and other bits and bobs around the team. I do more of the online stuff with all the play cricket stuff that the clubs need now to, like, you know, most of the leagues, in fact, require to manage stats and thing. And the players themselves are also interested in their stats. So that's another side of it, to keep so many more volunteers, like, needed to manage a club.
Indeed. Now, I mean, the amount of work that is put in by the volunteers behind the scenes can never be underestimated, and it's almost always unrewarded. But nonetheless, kudos on what you're doing. Over to you, Venkat.
Yep. We're looking forward to the exciting week. I mean, this week we have friendly cricket. It's been rather busy week with all the IPL action. Still recovering from Kohli's knock and then some. So yeah, it's been an exciting week, and really happy to join this podcast, and let's get going.
Great. Also, before I get into the action of the week, so by Sunday league, do you mean like you guys play 35 hours or something, and it's a more social league? Is it?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be social, but it's anything social. It's like hyper competitive.
Of course.
Yeah, it is. But it's 40 overs. 40 overs aside, and then pretty much normal playing conditions. Fielder staying and within the 30-yard circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes we get proper umpires, and sometimes we get players to do that umpiring. But you know how it turns out, right?
Of course. I mean, look. In all the lower leagues, as well as these social leagues, usually they are batting team umpires. And you give as good as you get and so on. So I'll not go there at all.
That's all that is, isn't it?
But also, look, sometimes, no matter which player you are, where you're playing, sometimes you come to the social leagues as well just to enjoy, bask in the sun a little bit. And also, some people come with the goal of gaining form. I've played for a social team occasionally, and I've seen that somebody from the top league comes and he smashes you for 150 of just 70 balls, and he's like, I'm set for the season now. That can happen if you're unlucky. Now, getting back to the action on field, let's first go take a look at the international ODI series between Bangladesh and Ireland. So, even with two games left, the first game in our previous episode we had discussed was washed out. As a result, South Africa qualified directly for the World Cup. But Ireland, look, they were playing at home. I think they've been competing really well. So both away while playing in Bangladesh and at home playing against Bangladesh, they've been competing really well. But does the result let you down? Because at least one of those games, I thought, having batted first, the second of the ODIs, they made such a huge score, right? You would think 319, they would be able to defend in a truncated 45-over game.
Yeah, I mean, you say home, but it's still been away in the sense of they're actually playing in England rather than at home. You know, the whole idea was because of the rainy season started the summer in Ireland. They decided to play in London, in Chelmsford, and thought, like, you know, we'll get away. But then, obviously, as you said, the first game rained off. I think, yeah, again, going back to your point, though, it's probably the bowling that's let them down. I mean, that second game, I think that was the game that Harry Tector, you know, scored 140 and George Ruggles, son of 74-ish. But yeah, I think it's the bowling that probably let them down.
Absolutely. Look, when it comes to key moments, what is much a repeated phrase in cricket for sure, but they didn't seize those key moments. For example, Nazmul Hussain Shanto was the only guy batting. When Tauhid Hriday got out, they had a chance to get into the game. Bangladesh only won in the last over with three balls remaining, right? And Taijul Islam got out again. So it's about a couple of dots here and there, maybe one over with eight instead of 10. And that sort of couple of those events make a difference and you run away winner with like three runs or something. I mean, now with IPL going on, you can see how much even one of those small saves in the outfield might make a difference and so on. It's probably down to the experience. When you look at their main bowlers, they had Josh Little back from the IPL. Mark Adair almost always regularly opens their bowling. They, you couldn't say, had their first choice bowling attack. But again, George Dockrell showed a bit of consistency and a bit of maturity, both with the ball again. He took two wickets. I mean, he started his career as a bowler after all. But, you know, I think, for example, Curtis Camphor was underbowled, I thought. Andy McBride never turned up in the whole series. And Graham Hume is still learning his craft. So, you're absolutely right. It's their bowling that let them down. But also, I think those key moments, small things, their captain, as good as he is, Balbirnie, I think he also has to take that journey where, you know, as a skipper, you grow. And the more you play, the better you get.
Yeah, just on that, I think Bangladesh have been in this situation a lot more as a team than Ireland have been ever. So, you know, Bangladesh, you know, a lot of players there at least have 10 years of experience.
Right.
Shakib Al-Azam has been playing since I was a kid, I suppose.
Yeah,
so there are a lot of that point you touched upon, I think, makes a lot of sense and helps you in capturing those key moments. So Bangladesh are no strangers to pressure. They've they've kind of played as a team together a lot more than Ireland, but Ireland put up a really good show.
Yeah, see, when it comes to the last game, spinner somewhat did better. I mean, both the spinners did much better in spite of, you know, playing in air quotes swinging conditions or early summer conditions. But you can see then Bangladesh, whom you thought, you know, they might struggle to defend 274, they were able to do that again. This is the experience coming through, right? It's not just the amount of runs you have. Like, you would have seen it probably playing in your league also. Sometimes even a 170, 180 can be defended if the set of people defending it are experienced and they know when sort of the most important moments are coming up and they're sort of prepared. There comes a catch, there might be a run out that might be seized. And here you saw that again in the chase, they fell flat. They had a solid contribution from the top four, at least four out of five, right? And then in that crucial, let's say, that finishing push never came and they fell short by 5 runs. So again, it you can put it down to inexperience, no doubt. But at the end, they would be asking themselves, did we let a chance go of, you know, qualifying directly? Because qualifying directly also means a difference in the price. Not just the circuitous route you have to take to get to the World Cup, no doubt of that. But as a board, they could have definitely used that little fillip, that few more, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds or whatever that they would get. That would definitely help. So these are like small margins that in the end end up costing much more if you're a board like Ireland. At least going forward, do you see Ireland going through the qualifiers in Zimbabwe, still making it to the World Cup?
I think it'll probably be a difficult one there, isn't it? Because of the fact that, you know, West Indies are playing in there.
Mm-hmm. Zimbabwe are there.
Zimbabwe are there. So there is more, again, it comes back to the fact, like, you know, there is more experience there than potentially they can do that. So that's going to be the difficult one. You would start with thinking, like, you know, West Indies and Zimbabwe start as favorites in terms of going through.
Right.
That's probably where you would start with, you know, and then kind of see whether they can make it. This is actually going to be in Zimbabwe, isn't it?
The qualifier will be played in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. So it gives them the potential home advantage in terms of that for Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, you know, in terms of the sort of planned and both home and away, they had the opportunity to playing in Bangladesh and then kind of, you know, putting in this series, but neither of them, they managed to do. I'd be hard pressed to think, like, you know, outside of Zimbabwe and West Indies as my favorites in terms of going through.
Right. So, yeah, but Venkat, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I do agree. I mean, I think West Indies, even a shade of what their former self, but still you would count them to qualify in this case. And of course, Zimbabwe have that home advantage.
Especially with Darren Sammy being
white
ball coach, being as, you know, someone who's actually maybe not necessarily ODI World Cup, but still, like, you know, the experience of winning two T20 World Cups, you would expect him to instill more that kind of, you know, sort of mentality in West Indies.
Right. Look, I mean, you brought this up, so I think it's a good point to discuss. He is more of a good motivator, I think. He's more of a good leader. So he'll be off the field. But when he won the World Cup as a captain, I think he didn't do much as a player in both those World Cups. He just made sure the right people were motivated, more like a Brearley guy, right? I mean, he is also very skilled, no doubt. But somebody who can also, who knows how to motivate the players around him. And he is no stranger to the politics and the other things that are going around in that region. And I also expect he'll be probably getting more of those players in who sort of turned mercenary or, you know, looked the other way and then made their own careers. Maybe West Indies cricket, this is a really good move. Also, Andre Cooley has been appointed as the test coach. And I don't know enough about him, but I expect that's been a very, a very carefully considered appointment as well. So we really hope West Indies, they're able to grow from strength to strength, starting with, you know, qualifying for the World Cup and then going from there.
Of course.
Right.
And not to mention, Brian Lara is still their performance mentor. I don't know how much his Sunrisers Hyderabad stint would help him, but he's still there till next year, Janikang. So that's going to be definitely useful, if not it.
Definitely. Look, I think Lara as a coach has also evolved quite a bit. So I think a decade ago, he was not as effective as a coach. Now he's a different beast, simply because as a genius, you simply cannot understand why people can't do what they can think in their heads. Like, he's a genius, right? That's what. So it's very difficult for the likes of him to. But then now, I think he's as I said, he's a much different guy. He understands how to communicate. He understands the different problems players might face, right, and so on. But indeed, they have a good setup behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. You know, interestingly enough, that the point you make about, you know, we probably years ago we saw that with Tendulkar in itself. You know, when he was captain, why he was not a successful captain, because the expectation that he sets, completely, like, you know, off the thing. And I was watching an interview yesterday in a completely different sport in football. And the same point was made, like, you know, how, like, you know, top level football professionals actually, like, do not make for, like, you know, good managers, because they lack the sort of, you know, the empathy to, like, you know, understand when a player makes some mistakes and then comes in and kind of, you know, rather than getting angry at him to say you made a mistake, to kind of have sympathy. You know, if you feel, I don't know how many kind of, you know, obviously this being a cricket thing, podcast and stuff like that, but if you just pick up on the football side of it, you know, you pick up the names of, like, you know, whether it's the the world famous Pep Guardiola, Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, etc. None of them, Jose Mourinho and stuff, none of them were great anywhere near, like, you know, they were probably mediocre or below kind of footballers, but the greatest coaches that side of the game has seen, you know, and you could probably pick even in the cricketing world, going back to, like, you know, sure, Andy Flower probably, but, you know, there are exceptions like Andy Flower and Gary Kirsten, etc., who did perform at the high level and went on to become great coaches. But then there was probably quite a few you would pick up, you know, the likes of John Buchanan, etc., who were not really great cricketers, but went on to become, like, you know, excellent coaches because of the man management and things like that. So yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because those players don't understand, because they can deliver it. They expect everybody to deliver at the same level. They are able to deliver, which doesn't come for, like, you know, most players. So we'll see. We'll see how Darren Sammy takes West Indies forward.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I hope he's given the rope. He did good with the team when he was a captain. I guess he's given the same set of time to prove himself again as a coach.
Looking at the kind of the path to the Cricket World Cup in terms of the qualifier, we completely missed the fact that Sri Lanka are also in the qualifier. So it may not even be Zimbabwe. It may actually end up being Sri Lanka and West Indies. So yeah, the likes of, like, you know, Netherlands, Scotland, Ireland are going to find it difficult, you know, with the fact that Sri Lanka, West Indies and Zimbabwe are in there.
Is it just two teams that would qualify?
Yeah, it's two teams to qualify.
Oh,
the qualifiers.
Okay, that's then a very relevant point. I always thought four teams would qualify. In that case, well, teams like Netherlands, Ireland, even one of Zimbabwe or Sri Lanka themselves, and all the West Indies, you know, then you have also some very good teams, Nepal, Oman, Scotland. So it's going to be a very good competition. So, but you would still back the test teams to get through. Yeah, what you were saying.
Yeah.
So Sri Lanka, and probably it's going to be a tough pick, but maybe Sri Lanka and West Indies will go through then.
It's going to be an interesting one, that tournament to follow.
Going on, I think we should get to the meat of the matter. IPL has just a few games left in the league stages. And we are actually witnessing a very, you know, interesting seesawing sort of a game between Rajasthan Royals and Punjab Kings right now, where I think they're actually reviewing it, but Hetmyer may have just been dismissed. Right. So based on that, from the replays, what I see, I think he'll get away with it. I don't think he's hit that. But in any case, it looks like, you know, this is going to be a humdinger. But nonetheless, one of these two teams will probably walk away from here with a chance. The other one is probably going to be knocked out. So let's start right there. If you look at the games over the last couple of days, so RCB beat SRH. They kept the chances still for themselves. Of course, Delhi Capitals now comfortably having been sitting on the bottom of the table for a while. They don't want to be there when the tournament ends, right? So they're going to now do as much damage as possible. So they beat Punjab Kings. LSG are now coming back because they had sort of lost their way, but they beat Mumbai, who were sort of on a resurgent run, but now are sort of stymied because of that. Gujarat Titans qualified comfortably. The day they beat SRH, they also knocked them out in terms of qualifiers. So I'm just looking at the last four or five games. And CSK stumbled a little bit against KKR. So usually CSK, as I was saying off air, it is now the time that they usually come into their own. This is Dhoni territory, right? The back end of the tournament. Nonetheless, let's start with CSK. After all, you are a love podcast, right? What do you guys think on how CSK is doing?
How is CSK done? I mean, yeah, well, let's probably pick it up from where they ended last season, I guess. You know, if you just started from there, it's a massive, massive work done, you know, in terms of from being in the bottom two. Probably at this time, they were probably in the finish, obviously, in the bottom two. You know, at this time, with one game to go, they were in the bottom two to right now, where with one game to go, they are in the top two. So that's like a massive change in the direction that they have moved. So overall you would think, you know, it's been quite successful season. Obviously, from a fan's perspective, the success will depend on the fact that, you know, they go on and win the IPL. All there's all this talk about, is this Dhoni's last season or not? Yeah, nobody knows except him, I guess. You know, everybody is still playing the guessing game.
I dare say not even him, but that's fine. We'll discuss that.
So yeah, it, you know, with that in mind, I mean, in some ways, like, you know, depending on how you read the cues. Last year, he said, I want to finish, you know, with Chennai, actually playing at home in the sense of that. So with you know, taking that into account, you would think, but then he's been giving mixed messages. And whether it's a case of, like, you know, as he plays, he realizes I can do it another season. But I personally, me, I think it's a stretch too far. It's in some ways, he may actually be able to do it, but I still think, like, you know, overall as a development of the franchise, it's probably a step too far to take, you know, for him to play another year. From a overall kind of, you know, perspective, it's probably been the same thing. Shivam Dubey for me has been the biggest find, you know. Him and Tushar Deshpande. I mean, Tushar Deshpande is, in a lot of ways, when I saw it the first game, and the way he came in as an impact player and got absolutely marmalized, and then to be at 19 wickets now, that's definitely been, those two are the, like, you know, younger finds of the season. And I think Mathisha Pathirana as well from Sri Lanka, like, you know, he's been another revelation. So overall, in terms of the final qualification, it's in CSK's hands, you know, beat DC, and you don't have to worry about all the other results, etc. You can comfortably rest in assuming, like, you know, you'll be in the top two, because none of the others are probably going to get there. We'll make it that much more easier. So that's kind of fair, I think. Venkat, your thoughts?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this season has been fabulous. Dhoni's keeping, for example, you know, has no indication. Some of the, you know, saves that he did is just out of the world, you know, full flat stretched. Yeah, I mean, so that, if at all anything is going to be an indication that he can continue, that keeping on how he has fared has been fantastic. Ritraj Gaikwad, Conway, Rahane, what a turnaround, what a find. I don't know how Dhoni managed to uncover a T20 player in Ajinkya Rahane. Is anybody surprised? But
no, it was always there, I guess. It's like, you know, as they say, ash-covered coal, that's hot. It's just ash-covered. He just blew the ash away.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's been fantastic and much needed boost. And Jadeja has always been the there and thereabouts for the franchise. So I think it's been a fantastic season. You know, we are really looking at, you know, just two more games to close out, two or three more games. And I think we'll be, you know, once again, lifting and giving a run for Mumbai for their money for the top number of IPL tournaments won. So that is there. Definitely, I think there are nagging issues as well. If you look at their chances, World Cricket Cup is in the number four or number five batting. Ambati Rayudu hasn't really delivered. Moin Ali is going for fair few runs. You know, so those are all the factors that can pretty much affect the chances. So we are really top heavy in terms of batting. The bottom half hasn't really delivered as much as the top half. So except for Dhoni, who's played some really good cameos. Bowling wise, we are pretty much sorted. So Chennai is looking strong, and it depends on which team turns up for their next 2-3 games, and that determines how it's going to be.
Well, that way, I think it's just one game, the do or die game, as I was explaining off air. So if they stumble in the last game, and let's say Bangalore and Mumbai both win their games, then Chennai are out. So Chennai and LSD have this odd point advantage, right? They had one game rained out. So in that case, you could think, you know, all Chennai need to do is win the last game. Then they'll have 17, which will be more than RCB and Mumbai will be able to make. So most likely, they're going to probably win it. So, you know, when you look at Chennai, the last is when they come good. And this is, as I said, Dhoni territory. They are also playing the last game in Delhi, though. You know, they always have the home advantage. But for once, they're playing in Delhi. And I told you, Delhi are on a giant killing spree. They really don't care. You know, as the famous Hindi saying goes, "Hum to dube hai sanam, tumko bhi saath le dobe sanam." So they're just probably on those type of situations. But I will expect Chennai to come firing, right? And then also Devon Conway, somebody at the top, like a Michael Hussey type role, playing at 110, 115 strike rate, but batting deep into the innings and occasionally coming really good. right? He also has done a wonderful job. And you have enough contribution between Rahane, Dubey, Moeen Ali, Raidu has not fired indeed, and Jadeja, right? Between these set of players, they have done enough, let's just say, right? That they are going to try and get through. I actually back Chennai to beat Delhi in that last game, right? And then go through. So Delhi and Chennai, we have dealt with now. But with that win against Chennai, Kolkata Knight Riders came back. And also in that game, something unique happened that Sunil Narayan, who was sort of wicketless for like 9 games or something, took a 2-for-15, a typical Sunil Narayan 2-for-15, right? And that helped them beat Chennai. And the other guy who beat Chennai was one of Chennai's own, Varun Chakravarti, right? The guy who bowls mystery balls. He took 2 wickets as well. And that ensured, you know, Chennai were kept to 144. So speaking of KKR, right, they have a little bit of a misfiring top order. That's a big problem now. Jason Roy had some contributions in the middle of the tournament. Rahmanullah Gurba started the tournament well. But since then, they have gone quiet. Same for Venkatesh Iyer, right? Nitish Rana has been there or thereabouts. Rinku Singh is a real revelation for me. And Russell seems to wake up and shut down. I don't know what is going on. If this is to be believed and Sunil Narayan has come back, so this is one of the franchises that has solid top order contributions required. Also, from the bowling perspective, they have a few inexperienced fast bowlers, Vaibhav Arora, Harshit Rana, all of these people, right? You have Shardul Thakur there, who's the experienced one, but he'll not take the new one, you know, 10 times. So they have some things to think about. But do you think they have a chance at all, KKR?
No, I think, I mean, fundamentally, the way I look at it is it's basically 4 teams for 3 spots. CSK, Lucknow, RCB and Mumbai. Pretty much these are the 4 teams that are looking to, you know, Gujarat obviously is sealed. It's primarily between these 4 teams that I think, in fact, mathematically, I think that's how it is. It's like between these 4 teams,
right,
someone's going to get, like, you know, the 3 spots as it stands. Because if you look at it, where are we? Chennai and Lucknow are in 15 each. And so Lucknow play KKR. The best KKR can get is to 14. So which means still, like, you know, Chennai and Lucknow have, well, RCB and Mumbai, unless they both lose, which could give, but then the run rate is kind of, you know, -2 for KKR. So they will really need to win with a big margin, or Lucknow will, RCB will need to lose with a big margin against GT.
Right.
For me, so looking at that, you know, sort of the net run rate element of it, and I think, yeah, KKR versus LSG, you would think LSG to be safe, because if Lucknow lose and RCB and Mumbai win, then obviously they go above Lucknow. And so I think Lucknow will want to win as well. So I suspect it's basically the top, or the teams that are 2, 3, 4, 5. Essentially, it's between them to, like, you know, who seals the remaining 3 spots.
Right.
It's a very, very outside chance for KKR, but, you know, with their negative run rate, I think it's kind of, the probability is very, very low for me.
Right. So you're absolutely right. I mean, Kolkata Knight Riders will need a miracle, both on and off the field. So they'll need to win their last game, but also hope for a lot of results to go their way, because you'll need Mumbai and Royal Challengers both to lose. And also you'll need one of Chennai or, I mean, so they have to beat Lucknow, right? And then they hope Chennai also loses or something, and something really miraculous.
Oh, even then at point, their hope is if they beat they beat Lucknow, they'll get to 14, and then they will hope that both Mumbai and RCB lose, because essentially they are the only 2 ones, because with Chennai and even if Chennai lose, for example, they'll still be on 15, and because of that odd point, you know, and Lucknow, even if they lose to KKR, they'll still be on 15, and KKR can only get to 14. So then they will require RCB and Mumbai basically to lose for them to, like, you know, be there. So it's, I think they've sort of left it slightly. And now RCB and Mumbai are already on 14. So it'll come down to basically, like, all 3 of them will be on 14 even if they lose. And then it'll come down to run rates between the 3 of them to see which one of them can actually go through. I think that's where the difficulty for KKR is.
Yeah. Well, just to add to that, KKR, I think if RCB lose even by 30 runs. I think KKR still had to win by 78 or something.
Exactly. I remember that article as well. The net run rate is quite different, quite huge.
It is quite, it is looking unlikely for KKR. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. If you go one step further from there, so I think we've talked a lot about Bangalore and Mumbai. At least these two teams have a chance, as in if they win their games, they have a chance of making it to the next stage based on their own results. Yeah. So of these two, Bangalore has a much better net run rate. And in spite of a wonderful fighting 100 by Henrik Larsen, Kohli's 100 topped it off. So I think you are saying, Venkat, you are still recovering from that.
Yeah, it was a run fest that game was, wasn't it? So first knock by Klassen, which was just outclassed by Virat Kohli because it was on the chase. That's why I'm saying that. I mean, of course, Klassen played against better bowling, you can argue. Kohli's knock was just belligerent best. You know, the first ball he timed, you know, you could see.
I saw that shot. Yeah. It was a special evening, you saw it, right? Those first two shots. The first one is just he put his bat in the right place, nothing else. Yeah. It flew off the bat. And the next one, he sort of took the bowling on, and both of them went to clean boundaries. So that was very interesting, absolutely well spotted. Also, I think Faf du Plessis took the initial pressure off. I think Kohli was still, 28 of 18, something like this. And then Faf accelerated from that point on. And that ensured the power play was very well handled. And even the crucial overs between 7 and 14, right? 7, 14, 15, this was very well handled thanks to Faf du Plessis. But by then, Kohli's engine was warm enough. And he rushed through. And he started hitting those wonderful shots. 12 boundaries yesterday and 4 sixes. Wonderful. And most of them were placed, actually. I mean, Kohli, the classic player, right? Yeah. You can see he was the real special one there. And he ensured, you know, that RCB would win and win comfortably. It went into the last over, but not a lot of doubt. I think Michael Bracewell did a very good job there, making sure there was no nerves for RCB in the end. But thinking of this team, look, their top three is very strong. We know this. And in their bowling as well, they have a couple of working links. So Siraj is probably having the time of his life, right? And then Harshal Patel on and off. Between Harshal Patel and Wayne Farnell, they're doing something. They're not doing enough, but between the two of them, they're doing one bowler's job, more or less. But then their spin contingent is really not shown up, has not done much. For example, yesterday, Karan Sharma and Shahbaz Ahmed went for a lot of runs. So that would be a real worry. But do you see Bangalore going all the way? First of all, winning the remaining match, putting themselves in a position to qualify and then going all the way.
Well, their challenge is obviously they are against the might of Gujarat in terms of the last game. So that's going to be their big challenge. Mm.
Right.
Honestly, Gujarat seemed to be like a juggernaut, you know, just the second year. But Hardik Pandya, especially like Shubman Gill, he seems to be batting in a different tournament for everybody else. So that is going to be probably, you know, RCB's challenge. You touched about their top three, but I think that pretty much has been the story of, you know, I was listening to your podcast from last episode, you know, in terms of, you know, where you're talking about like kind of RCB's chances in terms of qualifying and, you know, going back all the way to like, you know, the one time they could have done was Kumble's period and et cetera, et cetera. But if you looked at the entire period, you know, and Venkat and me were having this conversation a few days ago in terms of their axis, if you take Virat Kohli and then kind of look at their top three, it's always been like, you know, now it's Faf and Glenn Maxwell. Before that, AB de Villiers and Virat Kohli and who else was there? Chris Gayle. So it's always been like, you know, there's been Kohli and then there's been two other players. That has pretty much been their format. You know, their failure, if you like, going all the way back has almost been, they've just got this top three who can bat and then behind that, there's been nothing sort of thing. That probably has always been their challenge. And so it's a question of like, you know, okay, how are they going to address that? It's probably, as you said, bowling wise, they've been fine, you know, Siraj, Harshal Patel, Vanindu Hasaranga really hasn't done much this time around. So that's the other side. But then the bowling for, you know, they obviously, Gujarat, they've got Shami and Rashid Khan, they both done like really, really well.
That'll be something, right? Shami on one side and Siraj both bowling test lengths and doing well in the IPL. Yeah.
And I guess overall from a bowling, you know, perspective, Purple Cap, you know, 1 and 2, both of them are in Gujarat. So it's going to be like, you know, difficult one. I'm sure if anybody can, you know, Kohli can probably take them down again and do it. But we will see.
Right. I mean, yeah, you'll again back because they're playing at home now. You'll back them to bat first, maybe make enough runs to stun the Gujarat Titans because they'll not want to go into the qualifiers with a defeat. Right? They'll want to keep their engine warm, as they say. So that's going to be a very big challenge for RCB. But, well, they have a chance. That's the whole point. And as you said, there is quite a lot of cracks in that 11. But we hope, right, that they're going to come through. And, you know, they're going to paper over the cracks. The people who are really good will find a way to paper over those cracks and get through, right?
Yeah. This is one thing I want to just quickly touch upon was our SRH Hyderabad's team selection against RCB, which probably could have helped. And if Gujarat select any team like that, it might give them their way. I don't know if you listened to the interview from their skipper. You know, Aidan Markram had said there are things happening behind my back or whatever that to that effect. Basically, so that could help if Gujarat decided to rest some key players now that we're anyways going to stop. You know, let's rest some key players. You never know.
Right. Look, in that case, They will probably not want to lose their winning momentum. And the attitude that Gujarat team carries is everyone is a winner in his head, right? He can win the game, right? Beat Tevatia, beat even those big players. Forget the Rashid, forget Shami, forget the big players, right? Even the captain himself has not done much. You would expect he would be sort of, you know, wanting to do something for the team before the qualifiers and get himself going. In the meantime, Rajasthan Royals have done it. It was Hetmeyer who rode a couple of chances and then in the end, they brought in Dhruv Jural as an impact player and he closed the game out for Rajasthan. So that, I think, effectively means Punjab Kings are knocked out, right? This just coming through now. Going back, look, in that game where I think Mumbai lost, that was sort of a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? That they had the momentum in their hands, they were rising and they were doing really well. Suddenly they sort of lost.
I guess just speaking on Mumbai, it's generally overall in terms of it's been like, you know, the lack of Rohit Sharma's overall performance wise, you know, that's been the key takeaway. Sure, they haven't had Bumrah, they've lost some players and etc. Like, you know, but for me, it's been Rohit Sharma's lack of form, you know, obviously. This particular game, you know, if you picked up Surya Kumar Yadav, didn't play, but he's generally been okay, sort of thing, you know. That's one big one. And then again, that if you looked at this particular game also, like, you know, Rohit Sharma, what he scored 140-ish kind of, you know, strike rate. And then in between, they got this new player. Well, not new player, but Nehal Vadera. He was another one in terms of, I think, where they lost momentum, scoring 16 of 20. So I think that's,
right,
the middle order for them, you know, they surprisingly, like, you know, Cam Green came pretty late in that game. They obviously promoted Nehal Vadera over sort of Cam Green. I would have expected Cam Green, you know, given the fact that Mumbai needed to win to, like, you know, bring far more comfortable. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still in Mumbai's hands at the minute. If they win their next game, they still, like, you know, put themselves in a good position and then have to wait for what happens between Gujarat and RCB. But yeah, they could have potentially made themselves easy because it was not a big enough target. It was just 177.
Look, there, I think they're also struggling for combinations. So they don't have a very good spin lineup. I think Chawla has done his bit pretty well, but there's no support for him. They have Hrithik Shaukeen, who's on and off. I don't know. He doesn't play every game, for example. And when it comes to their batting, yeah, they have not yet worked out the combination with Nitish Rana going away and then people like that. Also, of course, right, the Pandya brothers mainly, right, with them going away, they have not completely worked out the combinations that would have been possible for them. You have Tim David, who sort of flowering out into a role that Pollard played. Still, Pollard always had an Ishan Kishan with him on one end, or mostly a Pandya with him on the other, you know, and who would sort of play the right sort of tempo to get him to finish the games. Here, Wadera is again sort of growing into it. Vishnu Vinod, I think he starred in one game. He won Mumbai a game, by the way. But again, he's used as an impact player late in the season. And Cam Green, I think he started at 3, he was at 4. Basically, they expected once Surya Kumar Yadav started coming good, between the top 3, much like Bangalore, they'll finish games, or they'll start finishing games. Right? It didn't happen. Surya failed in that game. That was a crucial link in that chase as well. But they had the start they needed. All they needed was Surya Kumar to make a 35 or a 40, and the game was done. Right? Because Tim David hit those big shots. So almost went to plan. But then the credit has to be given to Krunal Pandya. Mostly Krunal Pandya, the skipper, I think. The overs that he retained, the way Yash Thakur was used, even though he was costly, right, he backed him to continue delivering. Ravi Bishnoi, I think, quite a revelation as far as LSG are concerned this year. He's been having an up and down season, but he's won them the crucial games. 2 or 3 times he's delivered those spells, which are like 30 for 2 or 28 for 2 or 26 for 2. And that gives them that edge in a chase or in a defense, right? And Pandya himself, 4 overs, 27th, no wicket. That's a very, very crucial spell, given that he opened the bowling, right? So, when you look at all of this, you can see at least LSG, even though they've had a lot of, they have a lot of reverses because they lost their skipper to injury and a lot of things up and down, but they are still doing really well, much like GT, right? They're doing pretty well here. And I would say if LSG were to beat KKR, I would back them to come through. And in this case, I somehow think Mumbai suddenly had the splurge, but are now on the way down again. They might struggle. So they don't have a much difficult game, at least from the looks of it. They're going to play in Wankhede. It's a high scoring ground. They're going to play SRH, who are on the way out. Let's just say it's in their hands for sure. But somehow I get the feeling they might not do it. You guys like to contradict that?
No, I think it really depends on which team turns up. I think Krunal Pandya in the last game pulled a master stroke by retiring hurt and bringing Marcus Stern and Puran into the game. I think you need to look into that aspect as to he knows the Mumbai Indians in and out, their strategy, think tank and all that. Whereas I don't think SRH, you know, especially in the form that they are in and especially the team that they are picking in. You know, Rohit Sharma will have them for lunch, breakfast, and dinner. You know, and Surya Kumar Yadav, Tim David, even their misses would go for 6. So I do think is that there is that factor that if Tim David, Cam Green, Sky, Rohit Sharma, Ishan Kishan, that's a power packed batting lineup.
Absolutely.
So even if two of these fire, you know, it's game over.
Yeah, the thing, if you look at it, is like, you know, Surya, he's pretty much all of his big runs this season have come at the Wankhede. You know, starting from right at the beginning of the season against 43 against KKR, 57 against Punjab, you know, 55 against the Royals, the only one, 83 against RCB, and then, like, you know, sort of 103 against the Titans. So he's pretty much, like, you know, made Wankhede his fortress. So this last game being played at Wankhede, I wouldn't put it past him to, like, you know, get another big score against SRH. And that's probably, and this is where, you know, my thing about between RCB and Mumbai in terms of, you know, which one of them, I'm kind of still hedging my best to think, like, you know, it'll come down between those two as to who finishes fourth. And RCB got the difficult game, having to play, like, on top of the league, GT versus Mumbai having to play the bottom of the league. That's where that is the game that's probably the Sunday. I think both of the games are on Sunday, isn't it? So it probably is the kind of Super Sunday that's going to, like, you know, define as to who finishes fourth.
RCB have the last game in hand, so at least when they start their game, they'll know what they'll need to do, right? That's the only advantage they carry.
Yeah, exactly.
We can wrap up this section. Any last thoughts before I ask you for the final four, definitive final four for you guys?
No, I mean, I suppose just more a general question to you in terms of, like, you know, what have you thought about the overall, the impact player, generally the impact player role. Do you see, like, you know, it having had an impact overall in the IPL?
According to me, some teams have used it very well, some not so much. So some teams are still on a learning curve. So teams like Bangalore really haven't figured out how to use it. On the other hand, Rajasthan have done really well. Punjab have done well. Today, Rajasthan Royals did it well. Mumbai have done it well a couple of times, right? Gujarat have done it well. So you can also see, indeed, they have used it as an impact player rather than, you know, making a decision in hindsight. They've actually thought about it ahead of time and said, in a chase, if we've lost the toss, so this guy has to be the impact player in our mind, so that at the end, if we need that additional boost, 10 runs in the last couple of balls or something, we can use this guy. Or we need him to bowl the last 2 overs out of 3 or something like this, right? So that sort of thought process, only very few teams have come up with. And they have been more or less successful in converting it into wins. Teams like Bangalore, teams like LSG even haven't used it very well, I think. So when you look at it, it's sort of a partial success. But it's, as a strategy, I think it's here to stay. That it has its merits.
Yeah, I found it like it's given a lease of life for a few players who would have probably gone, the likes of Kedar Jadhav, Raidu, Mishra, who like just have to like do their batting, not fielding. Yeah, Mishra is another one. Just Paul Foro was, and sort of, you know, it's given. I don't know whether Praveen Thambi has been like, you know,
he's there, not here this year. Given them
an extra lease of life to like, you know, play another season. I mean, Dinesh Karthik, if he wasn't wicket-keeping, I suspect he would have been a lot more as well, and an impact player
again,
as also.
That is the exact move what I'm saying Bangalore have missed. They have another keeper in the 11. You can include a regular keeper in, because I don't think Karthik's keeping has been up to the mark this season. Like, he has not been a good finisher. That's definitely the case. But I don't think he did as well as he normally does even as a keeper. That is a problem for me. So then it's very clear. You bring him as the impact hitter if you need him towards the end. So yeah, it's one of those tough things, right? You like the solidity of his experience in the top order. Whatever it delivers, whatever it doesn't is another thing. You're still not surely, you're not fully backing Lumbroar, all of these guys, right? So anyway, that's another story. But yeah, good question. Any last thoughts, Venkat? And then you can give your definitive last 4.
No, I think this is good. I mean, this has been the most exciting IPL that I've followed in a long time, where everybody, you know, until the last 2-3 games or 4-5 games still were in the running. So this is good. This is good for cricket and impact. The role kind of really helped, further the cause.
Your definitive last 4.
Yeah, my definitive last 4 is how the table stands right now. So I would say, you know, obviously GT, and then followed by CSK, LSG, RCB. But RCB, you know, that's just because, you know, I'm a Kohli fan too. So that's the only reason. And I think if at all anybody deserve RCB, just for their fans, deserve an IPL bet.
Well, let's not go there. But sure. Thank you. Good to hear. From a Chennai fan. All right. Yours, Srini?
Mine will be, I think, Gujarat, Chennai, Lucknow, and I'm going to go Mumbai. Primarily because of the fact, like, Mumbai are playing the last game at the Wankhede, and they're playing like the bottom of the league. RCB, as I said, like, now playing the top of the league. So that's, I wouldn't write off RCB, but I think I'd probably, if I was a betting man, I would have probably put my money on Mumbai rather than RCB.
Fair enough.
Just the way the fixtures end.
So you're sure neither LSG nor Chennai will stumble?
No, I'm fairly confident they both will kind of, you know, get through.
Fair enough. So my last 4 will be the same as Venkat's. I'm hoping RCB will make it. I can't see Chennai stumbling. And LSG, I think they have enough in the tank to win one more game comfortably, right? So, and then the last more important question, who will win the tournament this time? First Venkat, maybe?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough spot. That's a tough spot. Heart says Chennai.
Of course.
Head says GT.
Yeah, I agree. Heart says Chennai, head says Gujarat.
All right.
You know, Gujarat have beaten Chennai like, what is it, 3-0 or whatever so far. Yeah. So,
right.
Heart says Chennai, head says Gujarat.
So, for me, this pains me, but I have to say it. Heart says Bangalore, head says Chennai. I've been backing Chennai from the beginning of the tournament or midway through the tournament, let's just say. And I'm going to stick to Chennai. I think Tala will pull something out of the hat. Something special will be done in those last three games. I back Chennai to do that. Let's see. Let's see if this is the possibility. All right. Now, if you were to move on, we have some interesting news. So one of the coaching appointments we already discussed. The other interesting coaching appointment is Grant Bradburn, the New Zealander, who was sort of in a consultancy basis during the New Zealand series in Pakistan, has now been appointed full-time coach for 2 years, right? Pakistan's men's head coach. Andrew Puttick has signed a 2-year deal as a batting coach. Cliff Deacon will be the strength and conditioning coach, rather the physiotherapist, and conditioning coach will be Rikesh Simon, right? So he's also been a fielding coach of the side, and then he was at the NCA. So he's a very, very well-known quantity, Grant Bradburn. And also, I think his style suits the Pakistani approach. You have, of course, team director Mickey Arthur sort of looking on from the sidelines a bit more, also sort of trying to structure things. With Najam Sethi coming in as the board chairman, I think they're going back to some of their older choices, some of their favorites. So for you, any surprise? Because I think people like Misbah and I think Miandad had some very strong things to say about it.
It's a surprising pick for me. I mean, yes, he's been there and stuff like that, but it's like it's harder to get my head around the fact, like, you know, because I would have thought, like, when Najam Sethi came back, they would have gone with another somebody from Pakistan, you know, in terms of that as well. So it's a hard one to, like, you know, sort of get around. And I mean, I was reading the interview and, like, Mickey Arthur saying something about, like, you know, they want to play the Pakistan way, which is kind of a new philosophy they're coming up with and things like that, you know, following on. And then saying, everybody else will then want to follow the Pakistan way. But then he says, like, you know, Pakistan way will be based on Pakistan's culture and everything. I'm thinking, well, why would somebody like in Australia want to play Pakistan way if it's based on Pakistan's culture and how they are teams play and et cetera and things like that? I think... One of the things with Pakistan is, like, you know, it's irrelevant who the coach is. It depends on, like, you know, they always have X-factor bowlers. That is what has always won them tournaments and everything else. And then they can, like, you know, completely mess up or win. So I don't know how much, like, you know, a foreign coach will help Pakistan, you know, in terms of... From my perspective, it's like, you know, I would have expected more somebody from Pakistan, but let's see, like, maybe they're becoming more professional.
All right. Venkat, anything to add?
Yeah, I think Srini stole my line. I was surprised too that you find there's nobody from Pakistan being in the coaching setup, right? I mean, usually this is not, and I think as a country, they're going through a lot of transition. So, you know, I think this feel of the Pakistan way, what is it? You know, I think it, as he said, and I completely agree, it has been a really bowling powerhouse that has, you know, kind of won them a lot of battles. So yeah, we will wait to see. But it is definitely surprising.
I would like to strike a note of balance here. That is, the people who've come and coached in Pakistan, be it Mickey Arthur, you know, be it Grant Bradburn, who was previously the fielding coach, right? So they have understood what the culture is all about. So they, as coaches, have evolved to understand and sort of inclusively also keep that culture going. So you have these maverick players. So be it batsmen or bowlers, mainly bowlers, of course, their continued strength will be bowling. But they have these maverick players who will suddenly come out of nowhere, blast onto the scene and then do really well for a short period of time. Once the discovery is over, they struggle and some of them settle in and stay in the team, some of them fall out, like people like Umar Akmal and so on, right, when it comes to batting. So when you look at that, I think the culture is now trying to also get the most out of the likes of that Umar Akmal, right, who has the talent but is very temperamental. So that is the typical way. So in this case, what they're trying to do is, one is professionalism is already there much in Pakistan cricket, much like IPL, what IPL did to revolutionize Indian cricket, PSL is doing that for Pakistan cricket. You see much more dedication on the field, much more commitment when it comes to all the other things that are going on behind the scenes, like training and those things, dieting and all of those. But the most important thing, you don't lose your unique, let's say the unique flavor of your style of play, but then you still grow in the other departments slowly. On the finals day, what happened when India lost to Pakistan in the Champions League final, if you remember, Champions Trophy final, there was a batter who stood up, the maverick Fakhar Zaman, and made that 100. He snatched the chance after he was stripped of no ball, if you remember. But then the other part of it was the bowling came good, which it inevitably does, right, when it comes to bigger tournaments. So that's the balance. So I'm thinking they're doing everything in their power to make sure both halves are held up. The traditionally maverick nature of the play, but the strong basis on which you fall back, the discipline, the fielding, the fitness, the strength, all of these things, right? So that's where the role of the foreign coach comes in. The attitude will always be there. So I think Sethi was at the helm when Misbah was both the captain and potentially the coach, if I'm not wrong, right? So he's seen that. Also, you have a lot of excellent indigenous talent when it comes to Akib Javed. Bakar Yunis has been there multiple times. So they know that there are good coaches there, right? They also have a wonderful setup at NCA at Lahore, where the coaches of NCA can immediately take over as the coach of the country. That's how it is, much like how they're doing it in India, right? So this sort of model is there, but they also want to professionalize their setup from inside out. That also means somebody like Mickey Arthur looking at how the leagues are run. So with Imran Khan coming in, always the Prime Minister of Pakistan is the patron of the board. And he had a different idea. He wanted to make it more like Australian structure, that there are only six teams and they had to compete among each other to be really good. And it took a lot to get into the state team. Something like this is what Imran had in mind. But then the structure into which Imran himself came, and then what has been part of supporting Pakistan cricket, is the department structure, as it's called, where you have multiple agencies, mostly private institutions, banks, cement companies. These are the people who support the domestic structure. So now they have gone back to that. So is there a balance there as well? That's what I think somebody like Mickey Arthur can do. Because don't forget, Mickey Arthur has been the head coach, he's been the consultant, and also he has seen enough cricketing structures around the world. In South Africa, in England. After all, he's also a full-time coach of Derbyshire still, right? So with all of these things in mind, I think they're trying to strike the balance where they get the best of both worlds. Whether they'll achieve it remains to be seen. What do you guys think?
I mean, I agree with you. I think where I'm at, like, you know, in terms of the fundamentals, is more about, like, you know, the not so much the cricketing culture, but the overall sort of, you know, subcontinental culture of which I think that you can historically agree in kind of, you know, in Pakistan is more sort of media, you know, ex players going to the media and driving it and sort of that kind of thing, you know, whether somebody from, I mean, yeah, to your point about, like, there's been like lots of, I suppose, foreign coaches who've come there, who've succeeded, you know, whether it's, going all the way back to, like, you know, Bob Woolmer onwards, etc. They've had, like, you know, success with more foreign coaches than they probably have with domestic coaches. Pre-Imran Khan, it was a completely different thing. I think the coaches at that point were irrelevant. It was Imran who was leading the entire show completely. I think now, you know, it's probably Babar Azam isn't at the same level. You know, he's had, like, you know, personally, he's had mixed fortunes in terms of, you know, his overall game. So I guess there's been a lot more of, like, you know, he's got to still deliver. Right now, I suppose they're all focusing on the ODI World Cup. You know, that's kind of the focus rather than the test side of it. And yeah, whichever way you look at it, like, you know, when it comes to white ball, I think you can never write off Pakistan. They are always be there, especially coming to, like, you know, tournaments and stuff like that. Even going back to the, like, you know, lost tournament in Australia, on a point where, you know, there was this all sorts of memes going around saying, like, you know, Pakistan are going to flying home. So suddenly them completely turning it around. So typically, I think you can never write it around. So that way in sense, you know, focusing on, and I suppose when you get someone who's not a high profile, again, you know, goes back to the conversation we had, I think, at the right at the beginning of the podcast, saying, like, you know, you don't necessarily bring in great players as coaches, you know, somebody who's been not that a big name will still can succeed. So this may be, like, you know, as you say, potentially someone who can like, you know, sort of be more in the background and kind of just bring the best out of the players, kind of by default come in, pull more out of it, out of them, and potentially see, we'll probably see, the first one is the Asia Cup, I guess, before the World Cup.
Right.
That's probably where we'll see, like, you know, in terms of the impact that he's had, and especially someone who's, it's not someone they've just brought out from, you know, out of the blue. It's someone who's been with them as a consultant, etc., for the last few months, looked at them in terms of games and kind of identified where they probably need improvement. You know, I mean, at this level, it's all about fine-tuning rather than coaching how to play a cricket shot or how to bowl a delivery at this level. So, they will always be one of my favorites in terms of, you know, any white ball tournament they go into. Interestingly enough, especially playing in the subcontinent, I wouldn't write them off.
Fair enough. Venkat?
Yeah, I mean, we will need to see. Pakistan are very mercurial, if there is one word to describe them, and they have always maintained that brand of cricket. So it depends on which team turns up on that day. Suddenly you can have them beating the world's highest score, or them collapse to about 50 for 5 and then fizzle out of a tournament. So we'll wait to see what kind of impact the coaching, the new setup has on their outcome. But I think I do agree that the PSL has done a lot to, first of all, free up people, cricketing players from financially, and also give the much needed practice in the absence of the packed international calendar that they used to have. The international exposure that Pakistan budding players need in terms of media or, you know, whatever. I think those things all augur well for Pakistan's cricket. But we'll wait to see how it all translates into success.
So I think before we go on to more serious topics, a couple of slightly disturbing ones. So one, well, Dhanush Kulkarnitilaka, who was arrested in Sydney in November last year when he was touring with the Sri Lankan team. He had 4 charges pressed against him in the courts there, and 3 of those have been dropped. So these mostly related to sexual assault and rape. But certain things, I think this is one of those also maybe a difference in culture sort of a thing. But when you look at some of the things that he was charged with, that they look quite horrific. But then I think at least one of those charges remain, and it remains to be seen how whether he'll be proven innocent.
For me, Sri Lanka has been really, you know, bad travelers. I generalize this, but also that's because we did have number of instances of breaches when they were traveling around in UK during pandemic. There were a couple team members who were sanctioned. And so I think at the, and in all the other sporting events as well, they have, you do hear news often that Sri Lankan team either, you know, goes out into town creating chaos or disappearing, not returning. I think it's there, something to be addressed at a different level, I suppose, and some kind of education also helps, because when you sporting obviously opens up a lot of travel internationally for people who would not otherwise, you know, be privileged to do that. And I think that factor plays in a lot. It's a matter of education and people like probably, you know, Muthiah Muralidharan and Sangakkara Mahela can kind of look into more structural changes within the board so that youngsters are given the right kind of tools and training. But this is an ongoing problem of any budding cricketing nation or budding country, you know, when they are thrown out into a different culture, don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, look, they also have some setup issues there, but not going too deep into that. This is more of a player discipline issue, and I think he was clearly in violation of curfews there when he found somebody on a dating app and so on. So there's a lot to be said there, but not going too much into detail, you would still say that most of the things he is accused of, you would not get away anywhere. So, and if such were to be the case, you know, that justice system will take its own time. In this case, some of his costs will be borne by the board. And as a player, he's 32 now. And I don't know if there's a way back for him, even if he's completely proven innocent. And, you know, he would have lost 7-8 months of his life and a very harrowing period. It's not easy, right? Knowing that these charges hang in the air and like a sword right on top of your head. So it's never that easy. But okay. All that apart, let's see if, you know, he's also acquitted on the final charge. Srini, any parting thoughts?
No, I mean, I, to be honest, I've not really been following that story at all, you know, but yeah, to your last point about, like, you know, sort of you're missing out almost, you know, I think it's still not finished. So there's still some more, you know, in terms of the case kind of going, and depending on what happens, you know, you would have probably missed out almost a year of his, which means... Again, he then has to, like, you know, sort of get up into, you know, perform and stuff like that. So if he's not there for playing for the qualifiers for the World Cup, etc., that means his opportunity for the World Cup is probably gone, which kind of puts, yeah, at the age you're talking about, you know, it seems difficult and unlikely that he's likely to come back.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. That's going to be quite some issue. The other... less than nice news. This guy has been a great player in his time, heat streak, but it's been on the way down. He was convicted, or he was sort of convicted for, you know, trying to influence players, introducing them to bookies and so on. Now it's come to light that he's battling cancer. Former captain, a very, very important player, and he was a part of the setup as well, right? So he's undergoing treatment in South Africa, we hear, and he remains in good spirits, but suddenly what a turn life can take, right?
Yeah, that one was a difficult one to, you know, kind of look at. I mean, even I think those charges were like they still was more, he was providing insider information on international games, isn't it? He really didn't and I know it's kind of slightly different terms, you know, he didn't fix the game, but it's still corruption. But yeah, that's another one, you know, kind of obviously we've seen in our own game, you know, Yuvraj Singh sort of coming through. So, fingers crossed for, you know, his hit streak. You know, he hopes to come back. He's obviously been there, like, you know, from a coaching perspective as well, in terms of with KKR as a bowling coach and all of those things. So, yeah, all you can hope for is, like, you know, good luck to him. And he hope he comes out of that stronger and well.
Absolutely. Anything to add, Venkat?
Yeah, it is sad news, and then, you know, by far Zimbabwe's best bowler, and then you know, had contributed to a lot of subcontinent cricket in terms of coaching as well. So yeah, it is. Also, he was closer to home. You know, he was the captain for Warwickshire County Club, which we are not far away from. So, you know, I think there is you know, a lot of you know, kind of connection to where we are currently playing. So I think, yeah, it's a sad news, and hope, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. And we wish him and his family all the best. This is never an easy journey to undergo, but I'm sure, you know, he's a very combative person, a very combative player in his days, and he'll probably come out fighting, and, you know, on the other side, we'll see him again, up and on the up. So we wish to see that day as soon as possible as cricket fans. Now, the last news I wanted to discuss today really is the England squad that's been declared for the Ireland test. I mean, look, Johnny Bairstow's proven his fitness. He's played a couple of county games. He's even made a couple of relevant scores, if I'm not wrong. And he comes straight back into the squad, but then at the cost of Ben Folks. Probably you guys are closer to the ground there, and you follow more about the English county season potentially. So what are your thoughts on the squad? Any outliers? Anybody you thought really missed out, apart from, of course, Folks, or you thought he didn't miss out? I would like to hear your thoughts on this.
Folks definitely miss this out for me. I mean, Besto, I know you said in terms of the county wise, you know, Folks has actually got a half century and 100 this season right at the beginning of, you know, the county season in April, mm-hmm. you know, in comparison to, like, you know, and even the New Zealand series overall, I think not just this particular one, I think overall Folks has probably been badly treated. I mean, they had like Ollie Pope as the wicketkeeper for the couple of games out in Pakistan in terms of the test, and then Folks only came in for the last test, and then they played those couple of inconsequential tests in New Zealand where Folks was the keeper. So I think this is almost more like, you know, trying to fit in. They just wanted to fit in Besto somewhere, so they've dropped Folks. Really, they Zach Crawley, even if they wanted Besto, in my view would have been like, you know, drop Zach Crawley and get Besto to open, you know, if that's where they needed in, and have Folks in on. I think everybody agrees on par, like, you know, Folks is a better wicketkeeper than Johnny Besto. Besto's right. Not really had any cricket for the last year. I think last he played was in September. So just one game, you know, before the Ashes. I think for me, definitely very, very unlucky Folks.
Okay. So I have a counterpoint. I think they're treating this as a preparation for the Ashes. So come the Ashes squad, Folks will be there. He'll be your first choice keeper. This is a way to allow Johnny Bairstow to get in the squad, get his, you know, feet wet as it comes to, you know, coming back from a break is concerned. And this is only a stopgap. I'm really thinking, you know, for a five test Ashes series, Folks will be there. I dare say he'll be there at least keeping three games out of five. Right? You have Ollie Pope, you have Johnny Bairstow. But then I think somebody like Zach Crawley and Dan Lawrence is sort of on the side. I mean, he's sort of in the reserves, you may as well say. But Zach Crawley is sort of being given another chance, right? So if he doesn't do much between him, Ben Duckett, people that who are there in the squad, so they will probably miss out, and then Johnny Besto will remain and Folks will come back into the squad. Look, the other additions for me, Chris Woakes has been brought back in. Again, it's a similar sort of a thing for me. They're trying to get those guys going because it's a long summer, you know, and they're also thinking all the way up to potentially the World Cup as well, up to end of October and so on, right? So for them, they want all of these people sort of fit and firing. It's May and into June, and they want to get these people going. So for me, even Matthew Potts is in the squad, right? And then what I would have liked to have seen is potentially another spinner in the squad. So there's only Jack Leach here. Thinking along same lines, right? So you would want another spinner at least in and around the squad to try and, you know, learn with the squad. So they have a couple of very young, good spinners in the background, including Rehan Ahmed, right? Amir Wardi, all of these people. I would like to see those guys get a chance and come in and try to learn with the team. I think James Anderson is also in the squad. I have a feeling, unless he's 110% fit, they'll probably just bench him, right? So you'll have Woakes, Ollie Robinson, and maybe even Matthew Potts taking on the new ball attack. I think Stuart Broad will not want to let it go, because it will be Stuart Broad, Ollie Robinson, and Chris Woakes will probably be the fast bowling attack. Jack Leach will make up the bowling. We have seen that Ben Stokes is not in a position to actually bowl much. I think he's going to build into the fitness, even into the Ashes. He's going to build up the fitness. So when I look at the squad, it's sort of people like Mark Wood won't play, I have a feeling, right? So this is my thoughts. So let's see if this really comes through.
I definitely hope Woakes gets picked up, you know, in the rest of the tournament for the Ashes. Mark Wood, I suspect, will play, because again, they need, you're right, sort of, you know, I don't think Mark Wood, Anderson or Broad, either of them will play all five tests in the Ashes. They will definitely, that all three of them will be rotated potentially. Each of them will kind of play, you know, in different combinations, three tests. Because especially the fact that the five tests are condensed into 5 weeks, they all will play completely, like, you know, sort of slightly different when in terms of talking about the Ashes stuff. The last time India came to for the World Test Championship, New Zealand played two tests against England before that and kind of, you know, got a nice preparation. India just came in cold. This time around, Australia, we are giving Australia, you know, the World Test Championship as a proper preparation for the Ashes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's my way of looking to say, like, you know, Australia are going to use the World Test Championship as, you know, I'm sure England are probably unhappy. If they had the way, they wouldn't have probably given them. But, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, it's a nice, because you can't, Venkat and me were talking, you know, I think on our podcast in terms of saying, like, you know, there is no, generally said, you know, match preparation is probably the best, you know, if you play into match conditions. This is proper intensive cricket, like, you know, it's a World Test Championship final. You can't get a better preparation for the Ashes than this playing, you know, in England. Slightly, like, you know, sort of, which hopefully, like, you know, if, other than, even if, I mean, again, I probably right at the website, like, you know, given up on India winning the World Test Championship this time around.
Aww.
That one. That said, like, you know, yeah, Australia will, like, go in into the Ashes well prepared, I think.
Well, at least Ricky Ponting said that he'll back Australia because of the location oval as well. Right? They have a stellar record.
Which was a strange one to hear, like, because, I mean, as far as we've seen, like, you know, usually the oval's more spin-friendly than its pace. It's always at the end of the Ashes. Well, any English summer, the last game is on the oval, and it's more like, you know, Murali's got an 8-4 or 10-4 in there, you know, in a match, etc. So it's probably more, even the couple of spinners from a perspective you mentioned, like, you know, Virdi, etc. Again, playing for Surrey. Surrey's probably provided more spinners than, you know, because the oval's been more spin-friendly, the most spin-friendly ground, I would say, like, you know, across in the whole of England. So we'll see how that one goes.
Exactly. But, well, I mean, Australia do have that balded goat, Mr. Yeah. Nathan Lyon. We'll see how that goes, indeed. So, before I let you guys go, one final question. Will Anderson retire at the end of this summer, at least?
Looking at his fitness, probably not. He seems to be, like, you know, just getting warmed up now.
Venkat?
I do think he would hang his boots, especially, you know, Ashes at home.
Mm.
I think it's a logical conclusion.
Exactly.
That's just me.
No, I'm going by your thoughts. I mean, if England win the Ashes, more so. But even if they don't, yeah. I think this might be the swan song summer as far as Anderson is concerned. And Ashes at home, bowling in front of home crowds, saying goodbye. Bowling potentially from his own end, from the end he was named after. Or the end that was named after him. All right. Those were all the topics and additional discussions that we had planned for this specific episode. It's gone on a little bit of a lower pace than I had anticipated, but it's okay. Wonderful chat. Thank you very much to both of you, Venkat and Srini. And I think I got the hint when Srini told us at the beginning of the episode. It's been a few episodes since he was guesting on this podcast. I'll pick it up. I'll make sure you guys are invited more often because this chat has been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you.
So, before we let you go, would you like to also shout out about your podcast where our listeners can reach out to you?
Yes. You can reach out to us on Yellow and Blues. Again, as this says, unlike Ajit's podcast, we are probably more India-focused and India-centric and, like, you know, especially as the name suggests, IPL-focused mm-hmm. and CSK-focused. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely. Do listen to us at Yellow and Blues. We are available on Spotify and all the other podcast platforms. And do give a like and review.
Perfect. Thank you once again. We wish all our listeners also a very good day wherever they may be listening from. Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.